A good introduction for me is when I can feel that the room is with me, when I feel like I've got an eye contact,
yes,
and people are following me. Okay. I think a bad introduction is when immediately people are off in different places or scowling at me.
Hey, welcome to the Expositors Collective Podcast, episode 90. I'm your host, Mike Neglia. This episode is an interview that I did just recently with Pastor Mike Dente from Calvary Chapel Paris. We begin the conversation talking about introductions. What role does an introduction have to a sermon or a Bible study? Why does it matter whether we have an engaging introduction or if we just jump straight into the text? And how can we invite people along as best as possible? So Mike Dente shares with me some thoughts about crafting a great introduction to the message. And then we talk about the content of the message itself too. So I know that you're gonna enjoy listening in to this conversation. Hey, this is the final time that I'm gonna invite you to Las Vegas for February 21st and 22nd. I've got my flights. I can't wait to come and to see many of you there. But you know, there actually is room for more. And so this should release a few days before the event takes place. So if you are feeling impulsive, let me say, go to expositorscollective.com, sign up, and then get in a car, get in a bus, get in a plane, stick out your thumb, start walking, get there to Las Vegas, because I want to, and others, we want to help you grow in your personal study and your public proclamation of God's word. Okay, enjoy this episode, and I'll see some of you in person this weekend. Hey, welcome to the Expositors Collective Podcast. I am with Pastor Mike Dente, who pastors in Paris, France, but we are in Millstatt, Austria, right now.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very, very good. So how long have you been pastoring in Paris?
We moved to Paris in September 2002.
Okay. And what's Plaster of Paris?
that's really funny. Nobody uses that, isn't it? Like just the...
it's like
plâtre is like this plaster that you put stuff up with.
It's right? Like ceramic.
Yeah. Or? Oh, maybe I'm thinking of something different.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. So that's plaster of Paris, yeah. And you are a pastor of Paris.
Right.
That's cringy. Okay. So how do you start your sermons?
Well, I usually start with an introduction.
Yes.
And
what's the difference between a bad introduction and what just a good introduction and what just happened right there?
A good introduction for me is when I can feel that the room is with me, when I feel like I've got an eye contact,
yes,
and people are following me. Okay. I think a bad introduction is when immediately people are off in different places or scowling at me.
Okay. So my plaster of Paris joke was a bad introduction because it was based on my cultural upbringing, not yours,
yeah. And
as weird root word association rather than actually connecting with you, the hearer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I don't want to say that your introduction was bad, but yeah, that's exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I intentionally did it bad.
Ah.
No, I didn't.
You had me there.
Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned that you try to, sometimes you change an introduction on the spot.
Yes.
Okay. How does that work? Could you give an example of that?
Yeah. Well, like this last Sunday, I was in 1 Corinthians 13 and I had an idea planned out based on a car, which I ended up doing, but I realized before I went in there that I had a lot of people that weren't there before and some that hadn't been there for a while. And this is because of some of the social movements that we're having in Paris right now.
Okay.
That have prohibited a lot of people from being able to leave on Sundays.
Yeah.
And come to church. Anyway, So I realized that what I really needed to do was to have something a little more technical, a little more directly into the text, and then come back to something lighter. There was just a hunger that day for people that really wanted to get into the word, and they hadn't been there in a while.
Wow. Okay. So your car illustration was based on a reference from last week that you thought wouldn't work?
Well, it was based off of my own personal experience.
Okay.
And it was just too light. It was just too, you know.
I actually preached on 1 Corinthians 13 on Saturday, actually.
Okay.
It was a wedding. So that was what I was asked to do. Mm. And you probably know that it's not technically should be a wedding sermon.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what they asked.
Yeah.
So. It works. For weddings, I always do what they want. I don't.
You do.
Yeah. It's not a matter to say, well, actually, this isn't really.
Yeah. Don't do
it. Yeah. So I did it on Saturday. I hope yours went well. Mine went great.
I think so.
I mean, they got married at the end, so
perfect.
Mine worked.
That's the most important thing. I had no marriages, but no, I think people were really touched.
Oh, good.
And it was exciting too, that feeling of being back together again.
Okay. As a church. So how few people have there been? Or I guess what I should say is how many people have been prohibited from coming to church based on the yellow vests protests?
Right. Yeah, there were some Sundays when we were down to like 20%.
Really?
Yeah.
Really.
And I meet with other local pastors, and everybody was having various troubles.
Okay.
Yes. One of the problems was on Sundays, especially in the city, there were no metros running except for two that go from the east end to the west end. And if you are anywhere in the north or the south, that you're just completely cut off.
Wow. I've never, I guess, considered how that would impact you. So. Mm. Sorry for not thinking of you.
No, hey, no problem.
Okay, so a question that we usually ask first is, what is the first time you've ever taught the Bible? When you preached your first sermon, led your first Bible study, what happened? How did that go?
I was doing Bible studies actually pretty early on in the faith, which weren't very memorable, honestly.
Okay.
I pretty much just, I went to Calvary Fellowship in Seattle, which is where Pastor Wayne Taylor taught. And so I pretty much just resumed what he said.
Really?
Yeah. Which, you know, had a bit of, you know, worked. It served its purpose. But my first truly prepared Bible study was when we were in Nice. We worked in Nice from 1997 to we left in 2002. And it was in French.
Yeah.
And I remember just pouring everything into it and trying to plan out what I was going to say in French.
Yeah.
And not having all of the vocabulary and language skills to be able to say what I wanted to say. And I remember making some pretty classic blunders.
Oh, yeah. Such as?
Well, things that are a little salty.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I remember saying is I wanted to talk about having an adult like faith or like being mature, you know. And so I made up an adjective, which doesn't exist, this like using the word adult, and so I said, you know, they were being adultère, which is like being like an adult. Ish, what I thought in my mind, what I really said was they were being adulterous.
Wow.
And so I got lots of laughs, and yeah, it was very memorable.
Okay. And so that was a sermon type thing, or was that an interactive Bible study?
It was I didn't have enough of a good strong thing of a language to be able to really express myself. So no, I had to give a Bible study.
Okay.
And then later on, I was able to do interactive.
Okay. Certainly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because even when it's your own language, many people find the interactive Bible studies to be kind of intimidating because anyone could ask anything.
Yes.
And yeah. So whether you are speaking your native language or your second or third language, it's intimidating no matter what.
Yeah.
So that was your first one. Do you remember the passage?
No.
Okay. It has something to do with adult themes.
Yeah. No, I just remember the part about faith. And yeah.
Right. Okay.
But not adultery.
Okay.
I do remember as a kid noticing that there was, you know, children's bookstores and adult bookstores. And then assuming that, you know, once I got a little bit older, they would allow me to go into the children, the adult bookstores. And then realizing, no, that's not really, not the same. They're not actually even books really in there. Okay, so that was your first time publicly giving like a sermon type Bible study public.
Yeah.
And your most recent one was this past Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
How have you grown since 97 up until 2020? What are the things that you think that you've improved in or grown in those years?
Preparation.
Yeah.
That's been the biggest thing for me is, and there's so much to learn from, you know, I find the word exegesis really bizarre because it sounds so much like Jesus, but it is so essential. And I find the more I go in depth, the better I can preach and I can be a little more free from my notes and follow even where the Spirit might lead, knowing what each word means behind the words that's in my translation.
Yes.
Helps. And, you know, because sometimes there are those things that you didn't think of until the moment. And then it's like the Spirit kind of reminds you of something that you learned and you have it there. And so having that preparation time, I find, has been a huge help.
Hmm. Did you not prepare very much previously?
Well, I always tried.
Okay.
Yeah. But the more I advanced and the more I continued, the more I wanted to go deeper.
Hmm.
So in the beginning, as I kind of alluded to, I pretty much mimicked everything that I heard.
Yeah.
And then I went to, when we were in Nice, one of the things that Pastor Pierre Petrignani taught us right away was the inductive Bible study method. And I really enjoyed that because for the first time, it got me away from mimicking.
I just interviewed David Downs earlier today, and he was saying that he learned the inductive Bible study method, and that has been such a consistent blessing for decades. And yep, I appreciate it. I don't really diagram the sentences any longer. Do you? Or
okay, now what I do is that I learned a different method that I've been using for about a year from Gordon Fee.
Okay.
Which is a bit of a diagram method, but it's going back to the original text. So I'm in, you know, the Greek text. And so you break down, you analyze each word, and you put it, how it corresponds with the phrase before it. If you're creating, you know, if the author is creating a pattern or not. But in analyzing each word and looking up the keywords, I find that it burns it into my memory better than anything I ever had. Plus, I'm very visual.
Okay.
And so having a little chart, and I keep it with my sermon notes so that on the day, I look at it and I can have it and it reminds me of things.
Really?
Yeah.
So is it kind of like arrows going back and forth, or you have certain codes? Could you maybe scan like an actual copy of it and I could put it in the show notes?
For sure.
Yeah.
It looks, I guess if somebody didn't see, it would look like it's stacked like Legos. And I'll highlight a keyword, so I'll put it in bold. And then I will put in red the key phrase that I want to build up.
Yeah. Wow. What's that called?
I don't know.
It's Gordon Fee method.
Gordon Fee's method.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, that's I love learning new things. So I'm excited to see that. And that's helped. So that has replaced inductive Bible study for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because by then, once I've gone through all of that, so that's my first day. I just concentrate on that. By then, it's so burned into my memory that I begin thinking about it. And then generally by the next day, I can begin looking into other commentaries and answering the various questions I have. Because by now, I'm like so in depth in it that, you know, different questions that I never would have had before are in my mind. So I look and try to resolve all that. And then I write a first draft. So this would be Thursday. And then I put it aside and don't touch it again until not the next Friday, but the Friday after. So I'm doing like, I give myself a week and then I come back and begin really preparing Friday, Saturday.
So it sounds like you're working more with the text itself, whereas previously you were working based on sermons of other people.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's allowed you to be, you said, kind of more free in that you're really living in the text, and so it allows you to kind of comment on it or bring things up.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's like, I like what you said about living in the text, because I feel that that's what it is. There's a lot more of a interaction.
Yes.
With it. And that's why I feel like I can, and I really try to avoid rabbit trails these days. I'm trying harder and harder to stay as close to the text. And this is something that I read from G. Campbell Morgan years ago on some book, where he was talking about the necessity of explaining what does the text say and nothing more. And it just, one of those little phrases that just always stuck with me.
Yeah. So do you think it's possible to do a disservice to your hearers if you explain what the text means and nothing more?
Well, you know, yes and no. I mean, I feel like if I don't explain exactly what it says,
yes,
then I am doing a disservice to them. Because I think once I've explained what it says, then I can, you know, as the Spirit leads, talk about other things. But if my hearers go away and they don't understand what the actual text says,
yeah,
then I feel like I've done them a disservice, and they've gone away with maybe partial truth, but they haven't given the truth.
Okay. So after you've truly explained it, then you can draw the application.
Yes.
And so you feel that it's in you know, not the best thing to only give them the application.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's I don't know if I should say his name or not, but one of the really big seeker, popular, trendy. He's a big muscly guy in the U.S. Maybe you know who he is. Mm. But I was teaching through Hebrews 12 many years ago. And then somebody told me that he was also teaching through Hebrews 12 at about the same time, or he finished it earlier on. And I thought, I wonder what he says. Because I was like under the impression that he was just kind of he's a muscly guy, but kind of a theological lightweight. But I was like, I wonder what it'd be like. And so I would listen to him, like, I think like on Thursday, Friday nights on my run. Like I would do my sermon was basically done. Mm. And then I would listen to him just as I read. I never would take notes or anything like that. And then I actually found that this guy, like, he had done his homework. Mm. Like he was, I could tell by the way he was talking, he knew the stuff that I knew about the text. Mm. And he probably was reading the same commentators maybe.
Yeah.
Yet he didn't explain any of it. It was like he was assembled, like it was being read. Mm. He'd make a few comments and then he would just go into stories about his childhood. He would go into like motivational tales that were, you know, loosely connected.
Yeah.
But you know, I remember just like one time just like running in the dark, being like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Like help them to understand what you just read and how that is connected to what you're saying.
Yes.
Because I could tell that it was. And I could tell that in his mind, there was a strong connection.
Yeah.
But it's like he did all the studying and then nearly like, okay, discarded that off the desk and then came with the conclusion that he arrived. And so for them, they came on Sunday and they just heard the conclusion of his week's studies rather than being brought into the text itself.
Yeah. I had the occasion to see a well-known expositor.
Well, I didn't say the name of mine. Just okay. Was he muscly or not?
No. He's in his 70s.
Okay.
And wears glasses. And,
okay.
Yes.
I think I know the one.
And he said something really profound about, he said the expositor's job is to help people see the text and understand it as if they were there studying with you.
Hmm. Well, that's good. You could say his name because if it's a positive reference, you could say the name.
John Piper.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's actually exactly who I thought. Okay. Yeah. So do you think that's a valuable thing?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
But I would say more than just studying it with you too. I think that there's because you don't want to just be busting out lexicons up there and explaining everything. There does have to be kind of this exhortative drive
absolutely
at the end. Mm. But
It's true.
Yeah,
it is true, because you don't want... Well, I remember once I was... I forget what the passage was, but it was something that was really techie. And I had, you know, all my PowerPoints and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I thought I did a great job. And then afterwards, somebody said, you know, that was a great lecture.
Mm-hmm.
And I just... Oh, mm-hmm. It just brought me to the bottom. But it was a great lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, well, you know, I didn't do what I should have.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really give them...
Okay, so you think, so going back to what you said, forgive me, I don't remember the exact words, but you want people to really see what's in the text,
mm.
but there also ought to be a bit of a hortatory edge or mm-hmm. or something to it as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, and so kind of a final question, I was going to ask, like, what is your sermon prep routine looks like, but you kind of talked Sorry. Us through yeah. that a little bit.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you work a week in advance.
Yes.
And then you never get confused. Do you?
No, but sometimes, and this is the drawback, is yeah. there is a little bit of play back and forth, especially mm. if the texts are really close.
Mm.
A good example is in 1 Corinthians 12, where talking about the body, and in part of it, the main emphasis is about unity and diversity. And then it goes to another part where he's really just talking about unity as a body. And so they're very fine points, but I just chose to divide the two because I thought that I really felt like the two lessons were important for our church.
Okay.
The necessity of diversity and the necessity of unity. But yes. as it turns out, in the delivery, there was a little bit of a playback.
Mm. Mm. Well, there's worse problems to have than your passages bleeding together a little bit, because that's what they do. Mm. So what do you do? Like, so you wake up Sunday morning. What do you do Sunday morning? Do you look at your notes on Saturday?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Saturday is I'm really just pouring over it, and then I try to give it, you know, give it to someone with my wife who's going to translate for me,
mm-hmm.
or just the mirror.
Yes. Know? Yes.
Not really the mirror, but I can't stand to look at myself in the mirror.
Okay, so when you say give it, I imagined you printing your notes and handing it to her.
No, you can actually say it.
Delivering
out loud.
It. Okay.
Yeah, which is great too, because I'm preaching in a foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes by actually pronouncing the words, I can find grammar faults.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, it's very helpful. And so that's Saturday. And then Sunday, if I can, I really like to go back to my first diagram.
Yeah.
You know?
The Lego thing?
The Legos, yeah. And then if I have time, I like to, one last time, look at my outline.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great. So then you go to church and...
And then, and then they're set up.
Yeah.
And then there's talking with people and getting ready.
Sure.
Yeah. Before I know it, I'm there giving the sermon.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you ever tempted? Do you play music? Are you on the
worship?
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
I was going to say, sometimes I'm tempted to flick through my notes during worship.
I wish.
Oh, really? it's probably best not to.
Really? So,
yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a good thing to really be engaged. I find that, because we have kind of four songs in the beginning, four songs in the end.
Mm.
And I just feel like at the end, there's kind of like this relief. Like, here I go. But
yeah.
you Do you play worship every Sunday?
Well, I've been training up our worship team, and I would like to not.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's been a couple. Once a month, I get to be in worship.
Okay.
I enjoy that so much.
Yeah. Well, may that only ever increase.
Yeah. Yes.
Any final thoughts for, like, there's a lot of like young or new teachers that listen along to this, people that maybe would like to preach one day. Yeah. What would you say to them?
I would say... Be a student of the Bible as much as you can,
mm.
and through all that you've been given. And I think as God opens up doors, don't be shy. You know, take them.
Mm. Wonderful. Well, thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And I've been hoping to get you on this podcast for a long time. And
thanks.
Happy to have you.
This is Nick Cady, and I'm excited to invite you to join us at our next Expositors Collective Training Weekend, which will be held in Las Vegas, Nevada at Calvary Chapel Las Vegas on February 21st and 22nd, 2020. Our vision as Expositors Collective is to raise up the next generation of Christ-centered preachers. And if that's you or somebody in your church who's teaching or being called by God to teach, we would love to have you join us and be equipped. Bye.